Dambisa Moyo has a unique perspective on the ethics of foreign aid. She was born and raised in Lusaka, Zambia, and went on to get a master's degree from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and then a PhD in economics from Oxford University. Later, Moyo worked for the World Bank, and then for 8 years at Goldman Sachs. Now, she's written a book called Dead Aid. Moyo told Anstrain Champs that Western aid has been a disaster.
I fundamentally oppose foreign aid to Africa because it has not worked. The original architects of aid in the sort of 1950s and 1960s had a very clear reason why aid would be an important factor in development. In fact, they had two things that they were focused on. It was going to deliver growth and it was going to reduce poverty. But when you look at the Africa story over the past 60 years, we've seen aid increase, but at the same time, we've seen growth rates decline and poverty increase. So it actually is not working for a whole host of reasons, from the obvious ones such as corruption, but there are a whole list of other economic reasons, such as the fact that it brings in inflation and it also causes dependency and a bureaucracy that kills off entrepreneurship. But perhaps most worrying is the fact that it disenfranchises Africans so that they cannot hold their governments accountable.
So you're not just saying that foreign aid doesn't work. You're going one step further and saying foreign aid actually makes poverty worse.
Absolutely. I guess I should say two things. First of all, if it were simply benign, if aid actually just went into Africa and it didn't alleviate poverty, I wouldn't have written the book. The problem is that inadvertently, all the efforts that people are making by putting aid in Africa are actually incredibly harmful to the society. But I also want to just clarify that there are essentially three types of aid. There's humanitarian or emergency aid. So if there's a tsunami or Katrina and so on, I'm not talking about that type of aid. Nor am I talking about NGO or charity-based aid. Although these two types of aid do have problems in terms of implementation and so on, and the lack of capacity building in the country that's receiving this type of aid, that's not what my book is about. My book is about the third type of aid, which is the large billion-dollar government-to-government flows and multilateral institutions like the World Bank Institution that have been over $1 trillion to Africa in the past 60 years.
What proportion of all of the aid that's going to Africa is this third type that you're focused on?
That is the majority of the aid going to Africa. Just to give you some illustration, about 70 to 80% of government budgets across most aid-dependent countries in Africa is aid. So we're talking about, you know, this year alone, we're expecting about $50 billion of aid to go to Africa. It is the largest proportion of aid. Everything else is relatively small beer. And obviously, something like humanitarian aid, it only tends to go in when there's a particular emergency, whereas these large pools of development aid are actually mainstay regular amounts of aid going to Africa.
Well, it's ironic because the form of aid that probably is most in the public eye is the charitable or humanitarian aid, aid for vaccinations or schools or water treatment facilities. So are those programs actually helping, doing good?
Well, I think it's important to understand what those type of programs can and cannot do. I myself sit on a number of boards of charities, and I understand what it is that they can do, and they obviously have some value in a very narrow sense. What they can do is they provide band-aid solutions. So, for example, you can provide a scholarship for a girl to go to school in my home country of Zambia. However, they cannot ensure that there's job creation or that these economies grow fast enough to alleviate poverty. And that is fundamentally the difference. So yes, please, you know, encourage people to go ahead and give charitable aid, but just understand what you're doing. You're not making it possible for these economies to grow at, say, 10% a year so that you can actually meaningfully move millions of people outside of poverty.
Could you flesh this out by giving some examples of countries that you think have actually been wrecked by aid?
Well, I mean, I think you only have to look across the African continent. Just to give you some broad headline numbers, for example, 10% of Africans lived in dire poverty in the 1970s. That number is now over 70% of Africans living in dire poverty. Of course, there are some extreme situations where the state has actually failed. So we've got Somalia, for example. So it's hard for me to pick and say, oh, this is one example, because I think it's really, in the book, I call it the Four Horsemen of Africa's Apocalypse, which is war, disease, poverty, and corruption, are factors that are very pervasive across the continent. There's a reason why African countries, by and large, are pooled at the bottom of corruption rankings, i.e., they have the worst levels of corruption, the highest aid dependency, the worst economic indices such as literacy, healthcare, and so on. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's take your pick, really. Most African countries are facing these trials.
So why do you think the African continent continues to suffer so much from poverty and political corruption while, I mean, many countries that have, during the same time span, many other countries in East Asia and Latin America have turned around their economies?
That's exactly right. And it's not just China and India or countries in Eastern Europe or Latin America. Even on the African continent itself, places like South Africa and Botswana have shown that it's possible to create an entrepreneurial class, to meaningfully reduce poverty, and to actually generate and spur economic growth. The one thing that these other countries have in common that African countries, by and large, do not, is that these other countries do not rely on aid. They've built an entrepreneurial class, which they're growing quite significantly and aggressively. If there's one critique of the sort of aid system right now, is that we've all gotten quite comfortable with this low-level equilibrium, this economic malaise, that somehow it's okay for Africa to continue to shear off from the rest of the world. And it's not okay. And we are hearing from leadership such as President Kagame in Rwanda or President Wade in Senegal, who've come out very publicly and very strongly to say that aid is not working and they cannot build up their economies or their societies to be equal players on the global stage by relying on aid. And they're actively looking for ways to wean their countries off of aid.
I don't understand why a country can't develop a strong entrepreneurial base while it's receiving aid. Why are those things mutually exclusive?
It boils down to incentives. Governments, individuals, and societies as a whole are very much driven by incentives. The problem with aid, which is essentially giving free money, meaning that there's no recourse if you steal it, there's no penalty, there's no punishment if you end up using the money for a different intent, often an unproductive intent. And so what happens is very often it's very easy for this money to come in and to support, at best, non-productive activities such as building a big bureaucracy that by its very nature kills off entrepreneurial activities, and I'll come back to that in a second, or at worst, it supports just pure graft and theft where the money's taken off. There are many African countries, just to illustrate the point of bureaucracy, that today it could take up to 2 years to get a business license.
Is there also a kind of psychological component? Because it sounded to me as though you were beginning to suggest that receiving large amounts of foreign aid essentially disempowers or almost infantilizes African leaders.
Yes, and I've talked about this a lot in the book. I do think that the aid model is couched in pity, because why else would we be pushing a product, i.e. aid, that we know has no evidence of ever working? There is not a single country on earth that can say today that it has achieved long-term economic growth and has reduced poverty dramatically by relying on aid to the extent that Africa has. But at the same time, there's good news. We know what works. China, you know, just 30 years ago, was worse off than many African countries. Look at what it's managed to achieve in just 20, 30 years. And, you know, we know that their formula of the free markets, albeit in a more shackled manner, is what works.
So what do you think would work better than foreign aid? I mean, first of all, would you simply have foreign governments just pull out all their aid, remove the World Bank aid? And what would you put in place?
As I said earlier, this problem of Africa is not an African problem. It's a global problem, and we live in a global society. So I don't think, in fact, I know, I'm not saying at all that donors and Western governments and international agencies should pack up and leave. I'm saying that they need to infuse their approach to Africa with much more innovation. To give you some examples are things like going to spend more time, African government spending more time building alliances with the new emerging economies such as China, the Middle East, and so on. Why do I say that? For a very long time now, which is very well known, the United States and Europe have kept African goods largely locked out, African produce out of their markets, because they're protecting their domestic farmers. the arguments for protectionism, I can understand. I'm not saying I agree with them, but I understand that rationale. So for African governments, it's a waste of resources to attend all these rounds after rounds to debate opening the markets when actually, logically, it's not likely they're going to open. So African governments should spend time with places like China, 1.3 billion people, 7% arable land, desperate for food. Africa can provide that food, build alliances there, raise money to finance development. I talk about foreign direct investment. Make your countries more easy to invest in. I've talked about the fact that it takes, you know, in some countries, 2 years to get a business license. That's unacceptable. And then lastly, just on an individual basis, you and I can actually participate in entrepreneurial, supporting entrepreneurs on the ground in Africa through things like microfinance, which have had amazing, amazing records of achievement in places like Bangladesh. Of course, Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Prize for his work in that area. But here in the United States, there are things, interfaces on the internet, such as kiva.org, where you can lend as little as $25 and meaningfully contribute to somebody's building of a business who can then provide education and health care for their children. It completely circumvents the government. These type of programs work, and those are the type of things we should be supporting.
That's Dambisa Moyo talking with Anne Strainchamps. Moyo was born and raised in Zambia and later worked for the World Bank and Goldman Sachs. Her book is called Dead Aid.